I guess I need to wait for it to start.
Yeah,
right. Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Cook. I am the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System Coordinator for Texas, and I'm here with the Texas Department of State Health Services. As she said, Dr. Vincent Fonseca could not make it today, so I'm presenting on his behalf. Presenter disclosures, I have no relationships to disclose. And on a personal note, the views and opinions contained in this presentation are solely the authors and not necessarily those of the Texas Department of State Health Services. So to give you a quick outline of what I'm going to go over, a quick background, as we all know, the issue at hand, the methods that we use, some definitions, results, and conclusions, kind of the standard presentation outline. As you know, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, and healthy eating are important determinants of morbidity, mortality, worker productivity, and increased health costs. Texas had suboptimal levels of obesity, sedentary lifestyle, and fruit and vegetable consumption for quite some time. New and continuing efforts in the state are ongoing to target these conditions. For our methods, we sat down, the BRFSS, the Office of Border Health, and Health Service Region 910 sat down to discuss the possibility of doing a border oversample for the 2007 BRFSS, in which we oversampled five different regions on the border. Unfortunately, because of time constraints, we're not going to look at the differences at all between the five different regions, but the border overall. For this presentation, we looked at the core sections of the questionnaire, the demographics, fruit and vegetables, and physical activity. Substate estimates were not reweighted. We have found in the past that the estimates don't vary greatly if we do reweight it. Something to know, though, is that when CDC does weight our data, they only weight it by age and sex, and not by age, sex, and race, ethnicity. And this is because they tend to underestimate the number of Hispanics that are in our state. So here is Texas, for those who do not know Texas very well. We have 254 counties, and 32 of those counties are considered in the border region, based on the La Paz Agreement. Race ethnicity, we'll be reporting on Hispanic of any race, and then also non-Hispanic white. We didn't have enough of any of the other subgroups to look at. Body mass index is calculated from the self-reported height and weight categories. And we actually looked at the four levels of it: underweight, normal weight, overweight, and obese. No physical activity was based on the extra set of questions that started in 2003 about moderate and vigorous physical activity. And inadequate fruit and vegetable consumption was calculated on the six fruit and vegetable items, and is the usual CDC standard definition of the less than five per day total. So on to the data. Here is the body mass index by border location. As you can see, normal BMI prevalence is lower in the border, which is, you can see right here, but obesity is higher in the border region. When it comes to the Hispanics alone, you can see that border Hispanics have a higher prevalence rate of overweight and obesity than normal weight. There it is. These two compared to the normal weight. Whereas non-border Hispanics have a higher prevalence rate, in overweight compared to obesity and normal. Now, in contrast, here are the non-Hispanic body mass index, and if you actually looked at, you can see the difference between the two. Here's our Hispanics, and here are non-Hispanics. Non-Hispanic whites tend to have higher prevalence rates in the normal and the overweight categories rather than the obesity category. Now we're just looking at obesity by border location and race ethnicity. Obesity in all persons is greater in the border. Hispanics have higher obesity compared to the non-Hispanic whites in border and non-border region. It is shown here and here. Lack of physical activity by border location. You can see that in all adults, the border region had a higher prevalence rate than the non-border region. And you can also see it in the non-Hispanic whites. Inadequate fruit and vegetable consumption. There is a high prevalence in all adults. This is kind of something everybody knows. And non-border non-Hispanic whites have a higher rate than border non-Hispanic whites. It's over here. Border Hispanics have a higher rate than border non-Hispanic whites. This suggests dietary imbalance, but we also have to consider the four vegetable consumption questions, which may not routinely capture what the Hispanics are eating. They eat a lot of beans, and they also eat a lot of mixed dishes, such as fresh salsa. And so we're actually hoping to capture a little bit more in depth with some new pilot questions that we have on our survey in 2009. So in conclusion, obesity is a leading cause of adverse health outcomes and is significantly higher in the border region overall. Lack of physical activity is significantly higher in the border region for both Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites. Inadequate fruit and vegetable consumption is high throughout the state. Interventions to prevent and manage obesity by increasing healthy eating and physical activity should be implemented across the state with a special emphasis on the border region. These should be started out at an early age since habits are hard to change once established. And we really need to focus on marketing of these programs and policy initiatives to consider cultural norms and expectations. And that is it. Do we have any questions? Oh, you can applaud if you want. I'll let you, I saw you. Do we have any questions? In the back? Access to care is definitely an issue on the border. About 40% of our border residents do not have health care coverage compared to the state, which is, I want to say, in the mid-20% range. So access to health care is definitely an issue because a lot of people are not covered. And socioeconomic status, they tend to have a lower education level and lower income levels, too. So that kind of ties into, I think, with the healthcare coverage too. Yes.
Can you talk about the new fruit and vegetable consumption question?
Sure. they're thinking about changing the fruit and vegetable consumption question starting for 2011. The current ones are the standard carrots and salads and. So they're looking at breaking it out a little bit further where they actually are asking about bean consumption. They're going to ask about green leafy intake vegetables. They're also trying to get a variety to see if people are eating the, like orange vegetables, yellow vegetables. They are also modifying the fruits a little bit where they're trying to get at 100% fruit juice intake rather than so. And then there was also going to be an option of two other questions that could be added if states are willing to add it to further distinguish.
That's national.
National.
I thought it was just Texas.
We're piloting in 2009. Mm-hmm. And then if things go well with the cognitive testing and everything, then it'll go national in 2011. Yes.
Stress is a major factor. Any
actually my paper in the next session in this room looks at stress a little bit with mental illness or serious psychological distress on the border. A lot of it had to deal with anxiety on the border rather than depression. So
yeah, I mean, we're also looking at a psychosocial hazard index for some further analysis with our African-American kids that live in the city. It's been shown actually in an adult study in Baltimore that that was related to obesity, and that was a combination of crime, liquor store outlets, the whole kind of index of psychosocial hazards in the neighborhood that would be related to stress.
And there's a variety of different things on the border because we have the cities, but then we also have these really rural areas too where there is some psychosocial factors even in the rural communities because they have to travel 30 minutes to go to the grocery store. So that has to be looked at as well. Well, we did have a few acculturation questions on our survey, and if I remember my numbers correctly, I want to say 80% were U.S. born, but again, that is self-report, and you have to realize that some illegal immigrants are not going to state that they're here, you know, from Mexico or were not born here. And I want to say 20%-ish were born from were born in Mexico.
My question is related to it, sort of like when we look at the health status of people living in South Dallas, it's always going to be bad because it's like your star community. You start living there, and then as you begin to move up the socioeconomic ladder, you know, you become better skilled at whatever job that you do. So that snapshot of health status in South Dallas is not really accurate. It doesn't follow that population. So is it true that a lot of those people that live along the border counties are they have those counties as their starter community?
Those communities I really can't speak to. That's not my really area of expertise. But based on my understanding is that they tend to build communities and they're pretty tight-knit. We do have a lot of communities that don't live with like water, running water and electricity, but those are part of the limitations of the BRFSS. And some of the things that you're asking about probably will never get at with the BRFSS because they're too complicated to ask in a telephone survey. Yes?
Is the survey conducted only in English, or is it in other languages?
It's English and Spanish. Right now we use the CDC Spanish version, but we've been having a lot of complications with the mixed dialect. So we're going to actually be now, starting in 2009, we should be translating it into more of a Mexican dialect ourselves. But...
very, very big lived in population,
Correct.
Quick question on the fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
And Hispanics, because beans are mostly a protein, would that make a difference?
What do you mean?
Well, they would be eating a lot more protein than they
yes. Well, they're supposed to...
I don't know.
Okay. I don't have really an answer for you. I mean, because they're also very fibrous, so there's a lot of fiber, and so it could fill them up more. Or, I mean, it's something new. I mean, once we get the data, it's going to be really interesting to look at the Hispanic population. I know CDC is doing a lot of work looking at Hispanics that do the questionnaire in Spanish and to see what is being reported, and they had some concerns about the cognitive testing of the questions when it's translated into Spanish, and if the Spanish-speaking population really understands what we're trying to get at.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Sure.
Let's give another round of applause.
We do obviously have a little bit more time, so if you have any other questions that you had for some of the other panelists that you may have thought about as you were going through the other presentations, I mean, now would be a great time to ask if you have any questions for the other presenters. Yes, ma'am.
We were the only ones that measured it, but ours was a smaller study, 350 high school kids, and it was a funded study, whereas some of these other studies are secondary data analysis studies. This was primary data collection, so I don't know if that answers.
Now, I mean, I think the biggest issue with the height and weight is the measurement. If you measure it, you're going to have to hire people that are going to do the actual measurements. And that in and of itself, when you're talking about a study done on the scale that the New York, the one out of Mount Sinai was done, that's going to be a large amount of people you have to get the actual measurements on. And so you have to hire, you know, workers to do that. And that's it's a cost. Benefit issue, you know, are you going to spend the money on that, or are you going to spend the money on trying to get more people into the study to get more data? You know, it's all about trading. You know, a lot of times when you're doing data analysis of data collection, you know, you have to figure out where you're going to spend your money the most, and it's not easy. Carolyn had talked about before, you know, that when they were measuring physical activity, the physical activity, the accelerometer, that's an expensive piece of equipment, and I, you know, I did some dissertation work on physical activity and looking at accelerometer, and you know, you have to figure out where you're gonna put that money. And so, if it's to get a better measure of physical activity, then you would put it there. But she had the money to do, you know, both, you know. So it's just the biggest thing is always going to be money, you know, especially when you're trying to do interviews and you're trying to get the data in a very timely manner. You don't have time to try to track people down and get them in one place and that sort of thing. So there are data sets that actually do have the physical measurements, like the NHANES data, which they have the mobile units where people actually come to those units. So there are data sets out there that have it, so you don't always have to limit yourself to the ones that have self-report. There are ones out there that you can use. Any other questions? Yeah.
I have a question for Carolyn. What did Robert Johnson, how did they respond to your results of your study?
How have they responded? They haven't responded. I mean, they have my paper. I mean, they haven't. What do you mean, how did they respond?
Well, I mean, the funder got interested only in the research results. They practically had them. So, programmatic.
Well, they were happy that we were able to recruit all the kids. I mean, they're very happy that we were able to recruit all the kids we said we were and get all the measurements. And, you know, we've been productive and had papers published. I mean, that's what they're mainly concerned with, is that the productivity and in terms of what public relations or policy? Is that?
Eventually they want to make a grant to reduce obesity.
Right.
So what intervention, you know, kind of.
Well, I think that's what this observational study will come up with, some ideas for intervention that we can build on, and we're just early in analyzing our results. So that's the ultimate goal, is with an observational study, you kind of have some clue to take it further into intervention, and kind of some of these environmental factors, it's not really clear, but at least for our study, we think the parents for adolescents are as important as peers. And that was a new finding, at least for allowing them to travel in an unsafe environment.
In the same line, I am following this question. You personally, what applicability, what intervention would suggest based on the theoretical model?
Well, I think the self-efficacy, overcoming barriers are huge for adults and children, and kind of the combination of an intervention that would help. We're not going to be changing the environment as much as we'd like to. You know, environments are going to change, but helping people overcome the barriers in the environments they live in, and increasing their self-efficacy and working through that with interventions with that, as well as including kind of peers and parents in how they, in terms of social support, to overcome those barriers. I think that's real general, but that I think we have to live in many cases in the environments we're in, and trying to negotiate the environments, helping people negotiate their environments they're in. Eventually they may change their environments, and kind of giving them the skills to whichever life stage they're in and changing environments, to try to negotiate those. I mean, that's general, but I think that's what I would take from this. Because we're not going to be changing whole cities. I mean, eventually, over time, some of these physical environments are going to change, but that's going to take a long time, and we have to kind of, maybe that you don't agree with this, but we have to live kind of where we are and figure out how to be helpful in those environments and negotiate these things to maximize our health and reduce our barriers so that we do something.
Well, let's thank our presenters one more time. I just want to thank I want to thank you all for coming to our session. We appreciate your support in the epidemiology section. And again, for those of you who aren't here at the beginning, we are having an EpiSection social this evening. And tickets are available at the EpiSection booth, 2524. $5 for students, $10 for everyone else.
Thank you.
Thank you.